And once again, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Friday, September 25th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
TGIF, Melody.
TGIF it is, and it's just been a brutal week for the precious metals. Pull the tag out of the hat for any reason that you want. I think the main culprit is still the stronger dollar. I mean, dollar was weakening, gold was going up, dollar is strengthening, gold is going down. I think that's what I said. But anyway, gold was down. It was up earlier in the day. It's up every morning, but they can't hold it there. And again, this is just the beginning of gold going higher. If anyone ever expected or tells you that it's going to continually go up, I mean, come on. It goes up and down. Gold down 620 at 1863. Silver, it's down 23 at $23. Platinum was up 1 at 854. Palladium was down 6 at 22.49. You had the USDX today up 0.28 at 94.60. We were breaking into 92s, and now we're almost at 95. Crude oil is down 0.18 at 40.13. And again, when we went through the Great Recession, you had the dollar at 72. We got a long way to go. This is just beginning. Numbers haven't come out. Everybody's just sitting back waiting for something to happen. And, you know, we haven't had the numbers yet. So, again, be patient out there. Just, you know, if the stock market goes down, doesn't mean that gold has to go up. They can go up together. They can go down together. But over a longer period of time, what we saw, if you remember, in March, when those market drops, when we had those types of, gold's going to go up. You're not going to have 3,000 point drops and gold go down. If it goes down that day, it'll be up the next. So, but when we're dilly-dallying around in these markets, trading between 26,000 and 28,000 back and forth, you can't judge anything by that. The Dow was up 358 points today at 27,174. The NASDAQ was up 241 at 10,913. The S&P was up 51 at 3,298. And don't forget, it's an election year. 10-year yield 0.66%, down a little bit. And, you know, it's kind of a bust overseas. Nobody really did anything. Germany was down, maybe 1% overnight. And let's see. Let's go ahead and talk. Let's see, where do we want to talk about first here? Housing market, it really has sort of been the rare bright spot in the past couple of months. And let me go ahead. My computer volume is up. Let me turn it down. And so buyers are kind of eager to take advantage of low mortgage rates. The inventory of homes to buy was scarce. That drove up prices. And that is what's threatening to derail the boom by pushing homeownership out of reach for many Americans. For home builders, the huge demand for housing was an opportunity to crank up construction. Instead, some are deliberately slowing things down as they struggle with supply shortages. We've talked repeatedly about surging lumber costs and competition for labor and land. I don't even want to talk about the labor. Labor is disgusting. And the lock drops, and no offense to anyone who's in contracting. I'm sure you do a great, great job, and I'm sure it is very competitive out there. But where I live around here, you can go fishing for a half a day and show up at work in the afternoon, and hopefully you speak a little English. But anyway, So anyway, after lockdowns in March brought sky-high unemployment, a lot of the builders expected a crash, but they did get a nice little bump from the buyers with the low interest rates, Dave.
Yes, they did. The trouble for builders, anyway, is that vacant land takes about 2 years to be developed. That's a process that is slowed essentially by local government regulations. Much of which is a sequential order of business. Meanwhile, lumber prices, we reported this a couple weeks ago, expected to add $16,000 to the cost of a typical house. They've risen because producers idled sawmills in the U.S. and Canada back in March and still face timber shortages resulting from, yes, a beetle infestation over the summer and later the wildfires, devastating as they still are. Now, builders can keep raising prices to stay ahead of cost to a point, but some are raising them by as much as 2% a month. Can't do that for too long. Every time prices go up, it's great for homeowners, particularly those who are selling, but bad for the renter, particularly those who aspire to become a homeowner. The looming issue, Melody, is that the demand for housing is outstripping supply at a time when construction has just gotten more expensive. And even if builders wanted to plow ahead, it's hard to get wood these days. Lumber yards are turning down some new customers early in the lumber supply crisis because they want to be sure they have wood for existing customers.
That's the way it works. You know, it's kind of like that's why I've been dealing with the same wholesalers for 25 years. Because when the crunch happens, you know, they're going to go to, you know, they're going to try to, you know, go to their old customers and supply them instead of the new ones looking around. I get it. But it can be difficult. And again, we get a lot of lumber for homes from Canada. We get a big portion and I know Canada is always raising their pricing, and I don't know if that how much of an impact that Canada has on lumber. I'll have to see how much of the builders market we actually get from Canada, but I think it's significant. But anyway, since the March shock, it's been again, we talk about markets, and absolutely they're underestimating inflation risks. And that's what we're going to talk about now. You know, some said buy inflation-linked bonds. I'd say buy gold over inflation-linked bonds, but these are Wall Streeters. These are paper traders that are saying this. This is what your financial planner is saying, because the economy isn't headed for another Great Depression. It's a cheap hedge. Against a pickup in price pressures. Some also thought, what with all this stimulus, inflation will be back in force as soon as the economy is back on its feet. Those more ambitious reflation bets were always going to struggle while the pandemic's got the upper hand. It's hard to spot their next catalyst with inflation expectations measured by break-even rates. And we're past the Fed's big announcement that it's now targeting an average 2% inflation rate, meaning it will tolerate a little more than 2% for a while. So everybody's getting happy with the inflation. So some economists are saying that what the markets need to see now is either the economic recovery taking the baton or further action to keep it from backsliding. Unfortunately, neither has happened. In the U.S., Citigroup Economic Surprise Index shows that the U.S. economic data are no longer beating expectations as consistently as they did. As for further action, the Fed isn't offering new stimulus, at least not yet. But he will. Jerome Powell made clear again in his testimony on Capitol Hill this week that the onus now relies on the government to spend more. Well, Dave, you know, the market's going up. That's why he's saying that. So as soon as that market reverses, the Fed will be there with their checkbook ready to, or I should say their computer, to pass those digits to whoever needs it.
Yeah, and that's despite his very own protestations to the contrary this week in that testimony, that where he said, you know, we're not doing this to prop up stock markets. This isn't about
not
that.
Not at all.
This is about Main Street and about Joe and Sally Average.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, it certainly looks like any agreement from D.C. lawmakers on a widely, I'm not even going to say anticipated, hoped for in some corners, phase four fiscal package is looking a lot less likely. Although, as we'll talk about in a few minutes, there is some sense now of talks reopening between the parties. But this less likely scenario is because GOP members essentially are readjusting their priorities from economic support in this pandemic to filling a vacant Supreme Court seat. Although, again, as we'll talk about in a moment, hope does still spring eternal for those who are waiting, shall we say. A number of political analysts believe the Fed probably still has the best shot among its peers in the largest developed economies anyway of hitting its inflation goal, but that's not saying a whole lot, Melody. And inflation markets certainly don't seem to be keeping the faith either. Break-evens have pulled back this month. For its part, the BlackRock Investment Institute, that good old hedge fund, still thinks the market's underestimating inflation risks and sees these three forces pushing the average yearly pace of consumer price inflation into the range of 2.5% to 3% between 2025 and 2030. That's versus the market's current expectations of around 1.6%. Now, those factors, or forces, as BlackRock calls them, one, rising global production costs, especially as supply chains are reshaped the longer we go through the pandemic, and especially as we begin to come out of it at some point. And yes, I am knocking on wood, ladies and gentlemen. A second is a shift in Fed and other central bank policy frameworks around the world to allow these new overshoots of inflation targets. I think we'll talk about this in the third segment today, a little bit of what's going on in the Eurozone. And third, greater political pressure for keeping rates low in a high debt environment. Melody, what you think, girl?
Well, you know, BlackRock, I mean, that's the mouthpiece of the Federal Reserve, too. So, I mean, they use BlackRock in order to buy all the corporate debt and so forth. That's who all the, if I'm not mistaken, that's where they process, you know, that's where they handle the trades and so forth through BlackRock. So, you know, it's...
So backs must get sore after a while from all that back slapping. Jeez.
Back slapping, back scratching, all you name it, you know?
Just wait till the back stabbing starts.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, it's they come out with these numbers, and we know where inflation's going to be. You know, we know they'll always, you know, they're going to rewrite the equation on how inflation is figured, you know, so they can keep it within their little guidelines. So, again, BlackRock is a mouthpiece of the Federal Reserve. They support one another. They'll, you know, they'll back up each other's, or maybe just give a picture to the opposite side just to show that maybe there's no favoritism or anything like that. But, you know, it's... You're right about the political pressure for keeping rates low in this high debt environment, you know, that they can't service the debt, and it was breaking the system.
And yeah, I really believe the more we read, the more we talk about it, the more we listen, the more readily apparent, if not obvious, it is that the main reason rates are going to stay as low as they are for an indefinite period of time. Some say, you know, another 2-3 years as long as our national debt is as catastrophically high as it is, and it's going to get even higher. You know, the one sure thing that could lead to a national declared bankruptcy and that godforsaken reset is if there's a default. And so the one of the ways to avoid that is keeping interest rates near zero. And so, you know, interest on future debt will be much easier to finance, even if they're not paying back any of the principal, Melody.
That's true. But the culprit that they might have will be inflation.
Indeed.
So they do have this balancing act, because in an inflation environment, rates are going to rise. So, I mean, they are between a rock and a hard place. And eventually they're going to get squeezed, and they're going to, you know, it will break. So, hey, Dave, they've done, you know, a pretty good job so far. Got to hand it to them. I mean, it hurts American citizens. You know, it kills us. You know, it doesn't help us at all.
Well, I think the Fed, in announcing its new inflation policy to let it run higher than its goal, and then to take a longer term average in resetting, I don't know whose expectations, primarily investors, I guess. I think that's a big part of that decision, is knowing that this long-term interest rate policy, not the inflation, the interest rates being so low and their upward pressure on inflation. I think they're just cutting to the chase now because they know that that's a likely consequence of their policy making.
And I don't know how much longer they can do this balancing act. I guess everything is easier to balance when there isn't anything major going on. But, you know, you get that little black swan coming in and showing his face, and, you know, they can lose. I mean, we'll be back to March, and March will be the same as in April. You know, it'll be a repeat until the markets...
Another lockdown, I think that could do it.
Well, yeah. We're going to talk about the unemployment benefits. They're on the verge of running out. Unemployment insurance is propping up all parts of our economy. We'll talk about that when we get back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Heading into the break, we were talking about the unemployment benefits on the verge of running out, Dave. I thought that they had already ran, I thought they already expired.
Well, for new applications, the pandemic benefits have, but the problem is that it's taken so long for a number of states to get their systems up to snuff, so people were later than, you know, early April, early May even. I mean, it was not in fact, some people you know, weren't able to get their initial applications done until, you know, midsummer. So it's just taken a lot longer for them to run through their allowed benefits.
Well, you know, this Catherine Edwards, she's an economist at the think tank Rand Corporation, and, you know, she's talking about how this unemployment insurance is basically propping up all parts of our economy. And she stated that the money has buffered consumer spending. It helped unemployed Americans pay bills while out of work. And, of course, the PUA, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program that was created by CARES, it allows a lot of folks, your freelancers, your gig workers, and others with limited work history to get these unemployment benefits. Now, this was data that was just released yesterday by the Labor Department, and it showed that 11 million people receiving those PUA benefits through September 5th. That's 43% of the close to 30 million Americans relying on some form of unemployment. Economists estimate that millions are depending on the program. So, though they do believe that the number could be overstated, I don't think it is. But anyway, Dave, it is, it really is amazing. I mean, those numbers are just huge.
Apparently there's been some federal auditing, we'll call it with I think it's spot auditing of some of the state numbers and practices. I know my daughter's caught up in Pennsylvania. She's self-employed, or is considered self-employed, an independent contractor. The state now wants some more specific background information as evidence of the money she claims to have made in, you know, the weeks since the pandemic began. And so she, I think, is now, what'd she say, 6 weeks behind in receiving her check. So it's sort of like the longer the program goes on, the more we're finding out about some ongoing challenges. But new unemployment applications, which Melody and Butch talked about yesterday, about came in at 824,000 plus for the week ending the 19th, last week of September. They're still higher at any point in U.S. history before the pandemic hit, though they are down significantly now from March's peak. But what the 824,000 figure rises to 1.4 when new applications for PUA are included. Now, even if Congress breaks the stimulus stalemate at some point, which we'll talk about in a moment, it's unclear whether the PUA will be extended. Meanwhile, economists aren't expecting a massive shift in economic conditions or a return to pre-pandemic life, certainly between now and December, one that would cause a substantial drop-off in the number of workers receiving these benefits. So, we'll see. There have been endless cliffs for the unemployed this year, Melody, and that's heightening anxiety around being jobless in these very difficult times.
I understand. And not to spend too much time on this, there was an agreement yesterday between Treasury Secretary Mnuchin and Nancy Pelosi about getting back to the negotiating table for a new pandemic relief package. They brought the price tag down a little bit to $2.4 trillion. Not sure if Mnuchin kind of agreed with that number or not in order to get them back to the negotiating table, but we'll just have to see. And, you know, it's the same things that we talked about, you know, how the bill will reportedly include enhanced unemployment insurance, direct payments to Americans and so forth, aid to airlines, aid to them, aid to this, aid to that, aid to this. Yes, that sounds like a V-shaped recovery. Yeah, just taking off like a rocket. Oh, anyway, I just get worn out with it. Yesterday, we did talk about Cuban and his...
His
silly idea. And so we're going to pass on that one. And there was... You know, the Genesis Group was out with a second annual Perceptions of Money and Banking report. I don't know what generated the first report, but this is the second one. To understand how well Americans understood various aspects of money. You know, not too many Americans are aware of how the system works. They're very much unaware of how it works. What is the Federal Reserve and how does it act to influence monetary policy that directly affects Americans? What is the gold standard? How many do you think know that? And why should we be aware of it? Does anybody out there, how many Americans know exactly how much cash does your bank keep on hand? I mean, these may seem like questions a lot of folks don't need to pay attention to, so long as the paper on your statement reads the right amount. Mm-hmm. But knowing these answers or not knowing them shows how much we understand how one of the most important systems in this country works in the world. We're globalized now, so it truly is a global monetary system. You might not think it, but we're almost there anyway. Here's what the 2020 Genesis report found. First, when asked what is the U.S. dollar backed by, 42% answered that it's backed by the U.S. government, which is up from 30% last year. What's the big change, Dave?
Oh, I think that's it. I think that's what they're trying to imply, that more people are slightly better informed on that particular issue, although we might take issue with that answer. You in particular like to say, Melody, the fiat currency dollar is not backed by anything. I mean, the Treasury Department says it's backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, but it's not backed by anything. And that's what makes it so volatile, particularly as an investment. But beyond that, but anyway, compared to that, you know, they 28.5% think it's backed by gold.
I mean, are you kidding me? Who are these 28%? Who are these people? But it didn't change, so it's the same 28%.
Yeah. And then you got another third that's, say, oil bonds or nothing. Now, the nothing component of that may be on to something.
You know, responding to the question of who is responsible for creating more money, 60% knew that the Federal Reserve is able to create more money injected into our economy and is responsible for the overall money supply. They don't do this by printing money, but by buying up securities and the money purchase going back into the economy, much like they've been doing in an unprecedented fashion since earlier this year, Dave.
Yeah, and the remaining 40% weren't sure of this answer. The quarter of respondents believing it to be the U.S. Mint, which we know simply makes coins in response to policy demand. Next, respondents were asked if they knew who owns the Federal Reserve banks. 61% said the government does. 19% is a partnership between corporations and the government. 13% said they didn't know. Next question.
They need to read some books. Go ahead.
Yeah, or listen to our program. Or both. Next question, does your bank need to hold the exact amount of money that customers deposit at all time? Now here, about two-thirds got it right that no, your bank does not need to hold the exact amount of money at all times or to what its customers deposit. Banks tend to only keep enough cash on hand to anticipate their daily transaction needs. Otherwise, they use it to loan money to others or to invest in other instruments. In any event, in response to the statement, I trust my bank, this is interesting, Melody, 84% agreed or strongly agreed, while only 3.8% disagreed or strongly disagreed. Yes, they do need to read more. In fact, read our newsletter this week and our blog, particularly the articles about money laundering. That may give you some reason to hesitate on that trust issue, ladies and gentlemen. And when asked which major banks they trust the least, I must say I don't like to rub it in, and I probably sound like an old record when it comes to this, but Wells Fargo was far and away the number one answer. In my mind, rightly so. Scum of the earth when it comes to financial institutions. And when asked about their views on inflation, 89% were concerned. Split between someone somewhat concerned at 53% and 35% very concerned. And last, almost half of respondents, 48%, said they don't believe people will still be using cash 100 years from now.
Well, that's interesting. That's only 48%. I would think that would be a much higher number. So yeah. It's kind of interesting to see, you know, who these respondents were and so forth. But I just wanted to go back to, let's see if I can pull it up here, about who owns the Federal Reserve when you have almost 20% responded that it was a partnership between corporations and the government. And then you match that up to down to those that trust the bank, 84%. You know, I mean, it's kind of interesting, you know, just to, because the percentages kind of support one another, you know, in this survey, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that is an interesting comparison there.
Why don't you go ahead and start on the Blue Cross Blue Shield settlement antitrust lawsuit?
Well, you know, this is something that's been going on for 7 years. Certainly flew below my radar, as I suspect the vast majority of our fellow country people. Blue Cross Blue Shield has reached a tentative $2.7 billion antitrust settlement to resolve claims that the insurance group's member companies conspire to limit competition and boost prices for policyholders. And to that, Melody, I say amen, and hallelujah, it's about stinking time. The settlement has been approved by the BCBS Association, which is the umbrella group, over 36 member companies. It would also require approval by U.S. District Judge David Proctor in Alabama, who's overseen this litigation since 2013. The case had been brought on behalf of more than a million individual corporate policyholders whose policies covered literally tens of millions of Americans. They alleged that the member companies violated the Sherman Act and other antitrust laws by, among other things, dividing up health insurance markets to avoid competing with each other. BCBS said its member companies cover more than 109 million Americans. It's roughly a third of the U.S. populations and include major employers like General Motors, Microsoft, and Walmart. The proposed settlement would drop a rule that two-thirds of each BCBS company's national revenue from health plans and related services come from Blue-branded businesses. It also said the accord would relax rules requiring national employers seeking coverage to work through Blue insurers, covering where their headquarters are located, which effectively gives some smaller one-state insurers a hold on major clients. Well, I view that as good news, not passing judgment on the health insurance industry per se. We know that in many markets, and this now is evidence of that, that Blues have such a stranglehold over premium payers, over covered individuals, us, that it stifles competitive pricing and effectively prices smaller companies out of the market.
Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome.
And we're going to be heading into a break here in just... I've been having some mic issues. We're going to be heading into a break here in just a few seconds. And usually on Fridays, I've been kind of disappearing here at the end of the second segment, and I'm going to do the same today. I want to thank Dave for allowing me to do this, to get away and maybe close the office a little bit early on a Friday. And so, you know, I could get some things done on that need to be done here at on a personal level and take some time off. So thank you, Dave. And you will be returning right after this break. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188.
Bye-bye.
We'll be right back. Dave will be right back.
Have a great time. Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hey, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, sitting in for Melody, this third and final segment of the day and of the week. As Melody heads into the weekend, wishing everyone a safe, healthy, and blessed time. I'm going to start with a topic that Melody and I have talked about a lot over the last couple of years. It's about corporate dividends and especially stock buyback programs, which we've been highly critical of, particularly the buybacks. After a respite of a couple of months during the pandemic, some required by the Payroll Protection Program, which required recipients to forego these, others based on some policy making by the Fed, and others just I think for self-protection reasons to get by these lean months, companies have been holding off, but they're slowly returning. But for some companies, the reinstatement of capital follows devastating layoffs and even permanent job cuts. In March and April, the pandemic, as I mentioned, spurred a number of companies to put their share buyback programs on pause and suspend or at least cut their dividend payments to shareholders. In the second quarter, in fact, dividend payments fell to their lowest level in more than a decade. One organization estimates that stock buybacks plunged about 90% during that same period. Now, many also rolled out cost-cutting measures, chief among them furloughing workers and slashing their advertising budgets. Now, the gradual return of dividend and buybacks indicates growing confidence in the broader economy on the one hand. On the other, I suggest it reflects the same level of sheer arrogance by some of these companies. But here's a list, if you're interested. List of companies that have laid off employees or permanently cut jobs during the pandemic and who now plan to return more cash to shareholders, either through dividends or increased share value through buybacks. One is the consulting firm Accenture. Plans to lay off 25,000 employees, announced that it would expand its share buyback program by an additional $5 billion. Darden Restaurants, parent company of Olive Garden, for example. Company's going to pay out a dividend of 30 cents per share after it said it had cut 11% of its corporate workforce. The shoe company Foot Locker reinstated its dividend just last month after just one missed payment, a month after it laid off or relocated 179 employees in Wisconsin. Guess, the retailer Guess, earlier this month, the company reinstated its dividend after sharing it also had permanently slashed its corporate headcount. No numbers. Johnson Controls. In July, the auto supplier resumed its share back buyback program after reducing its workforce in each of the last two quarters. And Winnebago Industries, the RV maker's board approved a 9% increase to its quarterly dividend in August, several months after it had laid off roughly 100 employees. Now, our latest blog, which is out as we speak, is about money laundering through too-big-to-fail banks and ideas for addressing it. Listeners can subscribe to our free weekly blogs and newsletters at dgscoins.com, or you can read them on our Facebook page at dgscoins. That's the @ dgscoins, one word. This is the second of a two-part dive into BuzzFeed News' recent study on money laundering and big banks in the U.S. Part one, which appeared in this week's American Survival newsletter and which Melody and I talked about on Monday's program, gave an overview of this widespread criminal enterprise and listed examples from the study of how it's infected our financial institutions and the people who run them. Today's part two asks the simple questions, can money laundering be stopped? And if so, how? Now, the answer to at least the first question appears to be simple and straightforward. Financial crime experts say if the government really wanted to, it could stop the dirty money that's being cleaned by the big banks and becoming enriched by them, and the broad range of criminality and criminals they fund, in a heartbeat. Now, how to stop it appears to be another story, or stories. One easy fix, BuzzFeed argues, would be to require companies to disclose their owners to the Treasury Department, rather than allowing people to hide behind a shell company, many of them registered in places like the Cayman Islands, Geneva, Switzerland, and other places near and afar. Congress is considering a rare bipartisan bill that could address disclosure for at least smaller companies. I guess you could call it a start, albeit belated and underachieving. The National Federation of Independent Businesses nevertheless opposes the bill, saying it raises privacy issues and would increase costs on those smaller institutions unnecessarily. Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio, a co-sponsor of the bill, said, "Congress must act soon because criminals have long been revising, adjusting, and amending their tactics to circumvent our laws." Now, greater public accountability is another idea BuzzFeed says could make a difference. As a prime example, they point to HSBC Bank, which continues to fight to keep hidden from public view the final report by the government inspector responsible for watching over the bank during the years of its deferred prosecution agreement. HSBC even took the unusual step of weighing in on a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit when BuzzFeed News sued the Justice Department to release the FinCEN report. FinCEN, for those of you who read the newsletter article or listened to Monday's program, will know that FinCEN is, it's F-I-N-C-E-N, is an agency of the U.S. Treasury Department. It stands for the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. Well, knowing that negative reports could be made public and potentially damage reputations and, well, here's the key, share prices, not to mention send its executives to prison, could cause offending banks to clean up their acts. Others believe these suspicious activity reports, called SARs, themselves are part of the problem, calling the idea behind them naive. That's because, in the eyes of one former insider, the largest money laundering operations occur with the cooperation of the financial institutions, or at least some officers within those institutions. He says the lack of enforcement has had nothing to do with a lack of evidence of suspicious transactions, but a lack of interest by political and law enforcement leadership to pursue those involved. FinCEN received more than 2 million suspicious activity reports last year. That's about twice as many as were filed a decade ago. This increase comes, BuzzFeed says, as big banks have faced mounting pressure to file and the volume of international transactions has grown. Over the same period of SARS growth, FinCEN staff has shrunk by more than 10%. In fact, according to FinCEN insiders, most SARs are never even read, let alone acted upon. The BuzzFeed report authors say the most effective way to fix the problem might be the simplest. Arrest the executives whose banks break the law. Paul Pelletier, a former Justice Department lawyer who once led the agency's fraud unit, was more blunt. The bankers will never learn unless you start putting silver bracelets on people. I'd admit, it does sound simple. Do the crime, do the time. In fact, that approach used to be the norm. Back in the 1980s and 90s, even into the early 2000s, the government went after CEOs all the time. That's according to former U.S. District Judge Jed Rakoff. In the past, the CEOs of Enron, WorldCom, and Tyco were all sent to jail for what they did. Rakoff observed, that's the difference. That's deterrence. But the retired judge, who's known for being critical about lenient sentences for white-collar crimes, went further. Quote, under U.S. law, a bank that engages in money laundering can literally be forced out of business by the government. And it's kind of surprising, he continues, that government hasn't taken that step, given the obvious deterrent effect it would have. Ultimately, BuzzFeed argues, the power to keep ill-gained wads of cash from being laundered through too-big-to-fail banks may not reside in the actions of a bank's compliance office or its computer systems or even its corner office bigwigs. It may not even reside with bank regulators or federal prosecutors or FinCEN. It may not even be just a matter of public policy. BuzzFeed suggests that shutting down wayward banks could have an impact on the whole economy. For the U.S., its major trade partners, and beyond. Yet, when other countries find their banks under U.S. scrutiny, who steps in? The U.S. does. In 2012, London-based Standard Chartered and HSBC banks were facing criminal prosecution. George Osborne, who was the United Kingdom's Chancellor of the Exchequer then, wrote to then-chair of the Fed Ben Bernanke and Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner to relay his concerns that a heavy-handed response could have, quote, unintended consequences. He warned the two U.S. officials of a contagion. Yes. That game of dominoes, with the implication being close one bank and the whole economy could follow. What happened? Federal prosecutors stood down. In short, ladies and gentlemen, it looks like money laundering isn't going away anytime soon. Interesting series. I hope you enjoyed that. Again, if you only caught part of that, check out our Facebook page or go online at dgscoins.com and sign up for our newsletters and blogs. Now, a few remaining minutes we have left in today's program. Here's an interesting, fascinating development, I think. House Democrats, it turns out, have announced they're going to introduce a bill next week to limit the tenure of U.S. Supreme Court justices to 18 years from current lifetime appointments. Now, before you go ahead and say, this is just, a partisan game to sort of wrestle control from the other side who happens to be in the majority with the constitutional right and privilege of appointing justices, blah, 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 blah. I'm not disputing that. I'm not taking sides on that issue either way. They say, Democrats, that is, that this is their way of trying to reduce partisan warring over vacancies and preserve the court's legitimacy. Just listen to this. I thought about this. The new bill would allow every president, every future president, to nominate two justices per four-year term. So if you're two-term president, you'd get four nominations, still subject to Senate confirmation. Now, it certainly comes amid heightened political tensions as President Trump prepares to announce his third pick for the Supreme Court after the death last week of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, with just 40 days to go until the elections. California Representative Ro Khanna, who plans to introduce this bill next Tuesday, along with Representatives Joe Kennedy III of Massachusetts and Don Beyer of Virginia, said this: "It would save the country a lot of agony and help lower the temperature over the fights for the court that go to the fault lines of cultural issues and is one of the primary things tearing at our social fabrics. Partly due to rising life expectancies, justices serve increasingly long tenures, on average now more than 25 years. Term limits for high court justices for years have had support from a number of scholars on both sides of the ideological spectrum. In fact, several polls in recent years have also shown large majorities of the American public support term limits. This bill is the first to try and set Supreme Court term limits by law." It's very interesting. Of course, this would have to be done by amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which has been interpreted over the years as requiring life tenure for federal judges and justices. It would avoid constitutional concern by exempting current justices from the 18-year rule. Food for thought, ladies and gentlemen, as we enter another weekend. I want to thank you for listening. Been great. Appreciate the opportunity to bring you the news of the day. Thank you for tuning in, and thanks to our producer and engineer, Todd. I'll be off next week. Melody will be back on Monday. I'm Dave Allen. Have a good weekend, and please be safe out there. Bye-bye.